Hello, welcome to Books on the Go, a podcast where we talk about our book of the week. I'm Anna Bailey-Karras and I'm here with Annie Waters. Hi, Annie.
Hello.
And this week we've been reading Gingerbread by Helen Oyeyemi. But first, some book news, and there are more awards. So this week, or in the last week or two, the Arbia.
that's what I say.
I feel like that doesn't sound right, but Australian Book Industry Awards have been announced. And one person has won big. No surprises again. Annie, tell us.
Heard of Trent Dalton? He's written a little book called Boy Swallows Universe, and he is the engine that could. And it's winning prizes left, right and centre. So
it won, isn't it?
The best literary book, the best audio book, the best new author and the book
best
of the year.
Book of the year. So four awards.
Which I think there's 12 categories. So
I think it's the first time one person has won all four.
That wouldn't surprise me.
Interesting that he won for the audio book, which I have heard. I think I heard someone say it's really good.
Does he read it?
Now I've forgotten who. I don't know.
But I think it would be a really fun audio book
Was it Sean Mooney when we did our Flames episode?
Yes, he said he was listening to it.
Yeah, he said it was really good on audio. And then I don't think we ever followed up with finding out who.
No. I'm not very good at audiobooks.
So the Sydney Morning Herald have announced their best young Australian novelists for this year, and there are four of them. Robbie Arnott for Flames, Jamie Marina Lau for Pink Locust Island, which was shortlisted for the Stella Prize, Tom Lee for Coach Fitz, which is a book about someone who finds a coach and goes running, and then as they run through Sydney, they also have philosophical discussions.
Yeah, it's meant to be very funny.
And then Ruby J. Murray, who also was named for her first book, but this is for her second novel, The Biographer's Lover. So I haven't read, other than Flames, I haven't read any of those.
I have had The Biographer's Lover sitting on my bedside table for a year.
And that's not.
It's got a beautiful cover and sounds really interesting, but it just is one of those ones that I have many books that sit on my bedside table for that long.
Sometimes you need something to prompt you to pick it up.
Yeah, that's true. And I've seen Jamie Marina Lau at a festival that I went to, and she's a really interesting speaker. Yeah, she's quite dry and wry and very witty. So I think I'd be keen to read that Pink Locust Island, but it looks quite grungy.
Yeah, okay. Mm. Well, that's good. Well, this is for an award for authors under the age of 35.
Yeah.
So these are all just annoyingly young high achievers.
Oh, probably very attractive and, doing wonderful things in the world.
And so that's our news for this week. And on to our book of the week, Gingerbread by Helen Oyeyemi. And I was keen to read this because I have heard of Helen Oyeyemi. It's another one where I've been meaning to get to her, and you'll be able to tell us more, Annie, but one or two books that had come to my attention and I'd never got around to reading them. And so when I saw this came out, I thought this might be my chance. But tell us a bit more about Helen Oyeyemi.
Well, so I came to her, I read one of her books, Boy Snowbird, on a plane trip from the UK to America 6 or 7 years ago, and absolutely blew my mind. It's in three different sections voiced by Boy, Snow and Bird, who are all characters in the book. And it's just this dreamy, beautiful, a perfect plain read, a more kind of literary plain read.
Yeah.
But I was just totally in this different space and it was absolutely beautiful. So, I've read a couple of her other books since then. She's a Nigerian-born British author and she's living in Prague for the past few years, which I think is interesting when you read this book.
I see.
Because I think lots of the places have that kind of Prague, Czech, dreamlike feel to them. So Gingerbread is her sixth novel. She's also written two plays and a short story collection.
But she's quite prolific.
She is quite prolific. Yeah. And that won, the short story collection, won the Penn Open Book Award in 2016. She also won the 2010 Somerset Maugham Award for White is for Witching, which is another one that I've read, which is quite similar to this again, quite fairy tale-like. So, she often plays with mythology and fairy tales and the occult or kind of magical, mystical themes.
Yeah.
Her language is really playful and poetic, and she uses magical realism, the gothic and the surreal to kind of bring her stories to life.
I think the one that I had heard of was what is not yours is not yours.
Yes, yeah, that's the story collection.
I just love the title.
Yeah, yeah, so that was a couple of years ago. So yeah, Gingerbread is the story of three generations of women who are called Perdita, Harriet and Margot. And I guess it's, I don't want to say it's based on the Hansel and Gretel story. It kind of is a wild spin-off.
I was going to ask you, when we get on to discussing the book, what's the deal with that? How does it connect up with that?
But yeah, so it's kind of a story within a story within a story. So in present day London, Harriet, who's the middle generation, she's the mother of Perdita and the daughter of Margot, is kind of telling her life story to her daughter, because Perdita has tried to get back to this magical land or imaginary land or just really underknown, underrecognized land called Druhestania that their family purports to come from. And so she's telling her the story. Perdita has never known who her father is and is quite keen to learn that. She has four dolls who live in her bedroom
who talk
and they are also quite keen to find out what the romantic goings on were. So their names are Prim, Sago, Bonnie and Lollipop, which I think just gives you an idea. This is not a realist novel.
It's quite whimsical.
But so as she's relating this story of her life, she gets into this family who've been quite instrumental in their upbringing. So Margot, the mother, worked on a farm with her husband Simon, and this family, Kershavals, were the owners of all the farms in this area. One day Cleo, one of the members of the Kershaval family, comes to their farm along with her daughter Gretel and says that lots of the farm girls can go off and work in the gingerbread factory and make this wonderful gingerbread that all of their families have always made, and they can market it and they'll be the gingerbread girls. And so Harriet goes off and dutifully starts working in the factory and earning money and sending it back home. And then at some point Harriet makes the move to London via the magical aeroplane. Hard to say how she gets to London, but she comes to London. So Perdita has never seen this homeland and she is desperate to try and figure out whether it's real or whether it's just a story that her family has always told. And so she takes some quite drastic steps to try and get back to that homeland. As you can tell, it's not a very easily definable book, but I think it's great fun. It's a real romp, I think. Yeah, it's very hard to define, but I really enjoyed reading it. I think it's probably not my favourite of her books, but it makes me chuckle. And it's just, it's a book that makes me want to keep reading even though I don't quite know why.
Yeah.
It's hard to talk about. What did you think, Anna? Yeah. I know you're not often a fan of strange magical realism books.
No, you know this is where I struggle. But no, this was such an interesting reading experience for me, and I don't say that in a loaded way, but I had so many mixed feelings because I, on the whole, the more I think about it afterwards, the more I like it. And so overall, very positive. And there's lots that I loved about it. I loved the tone. It's a very warm tone. And as you say, you want to keep reading. And part of that, I think, is because as an author, she invites you into the story. So, for example, early on in the setup section of the book, Harriet as a mother is going to the Parents and Friends Association meeting at her daughter's school, and she's thrusting gingerbread onto all these other parents and friends. And it's a scene where Harriet's not necessarily behaving in a sympathetic way because she's sort of forcing gingerbread onto them, but the author is telling you in such – sort of confiding in you and bringing you into the story to sort of share that. It's a very relatable sort of scene, and the writing is very funny, very lively. And so there's a sentence early on where Harriet – it says, Harriet ate a piece of gingerbread and tingled all over. It was a square meal and a good night's sleep and a long – blood spattered howl at the moon rolled into one. So there's sentences like that that just take your breath away, and then there's just so much humour, and then the humour's quite gentle and quite dry, but it just appealed to me, I think. But there's a part where Perdita eventually hires this investigator, but she's saying to Harriet, it's okay because he didn't or he or she didn't charge much. It was like Tesco fees. And Harriet, and, you know, it was quite a big brief that the investigator had given all the magical elements. Mm. And Harriet is laughing but also angry at any investigator who'd take on a case for a Tesco value fee while promising, well, Fortnum's type results. Which is like, there's just that humour all the way through. Yeah. So I loved that, and that is another thing that I think kept me engaged and kept me reading. And all the way along the writing, even though I didn't know what was happening half the time, I felt confident that the author did, and that she it was very assured. Mm. And you can tell it's not, you know, her first novel. She's got a strength to the writing, and you could see that she was driving somewhere. I didn't know where, but she, you know, that you had that confidence that this is an author who knows exactly what she's doing. No, I loved the characters, Harriet and Perdita in particular. I thought they were really strong, independent women, sort of rebels in their own way, and they're outsiders. So Harriet doesn't fit in with these parents and friends, and Perdita doesn't fit in at school. She's sort of see-through. People seem to see through her, and she doesn't have substance. So they're great characters. I did completely lose track of the Kershevals.
Yeah, me too.
I didn't keep up with at every now, like at different in different scenes, I could follow who was involved at any
but as
one
soon as
time.
They left.
But then when the others came in, I thought, hang on, but who's married to anyway?
Well, and they're all related.
I just went on with it. I didn't worry about it. And I liked, whilst, yes, I don't like too much magic or fairy tale as a rule, there are always exceptions. What I know that can be good for, and some people really love about that, is that it can make the story more universal, or it can be in the, I guess, like a fairy tale, it can then be used as a metaphor or as a symbol for some other bigger story or a deeper meaning. And I could see that happening here, and so it made me think a lot, and I liked that aspect of it. So, for example, Druhastania, which is the country, Harriet's home country, but it's not on any maps. It either is just a make-believe country, like the magic faraway tree type of thing, or is this a symbol or a metaphor for countries that are indeed not on maps, because who's really drawing the maps? And she mentions Taiwan, which China would say is part of China and doesn't include as a separate country. And and knowing now that she has this connection with Prague, and Czechoslovakia is mentioned in the book, I wondered if it's a bit like a Bohemia or one of those places that was then caught up, has had its borders redefined, and it no longer appears on a world map as Bohemia, but is part of the Czech Republic, as I understand it. I'm hazy about geography issues, but, you know, it opens it up for you to think about it in all sorts of ways, which I liked, but it tripped me up constantly. So that's why it was such an interesting experience, because I kept, things were shifting and characters weren't who they seemed. And even the house, there was one house where the rooms were shifting.
Yeah.
And so that was, you know, whatever, that's okay. But it was, that symbolizes the experience for me of reading the book, that it was so, just when you thought you're in the parents and friends meeting and you can picture the setting, you know where you are, then Perdita's eaten a piece of gingerbread and disappeared. But was she just going on a metaphysical journey, or is she in a coma, or like then you kind of have to stop and think, hang on, what's going on? And I've got my head in my hands. And so that was happening just a bit too often for me to really immerse myself in the story. So I don't know. Yeah. was there too much magic? I just couldn't get a hold on it.
I quite like that slipperiness. But yeah, I agree. I definitely lost track of the Kershevals. They all seem to be related to each other. Aristide and
Ambrose
and Tamar. And they all have nicknames. And yeah, and so, and then their wives are either super invested or not around at all, and they're madly in love with them. And you kind of get, it's one of those stories where every time you meet a character, like in Disoriental, every time you meet a character, you get their backstory.
Yeah.
And then, so that kind of takes you out of the story that you're telling and kind of takes you into their story, and then you have to bring that all along. So it is big and sprawling, and I think she's interested in looking at families and wealth and motherhood in particular. I think those three female characters are, as you say, really strong and interesting. I think their relationships with each other aren't traditional parent-child relationships. There's definitely a lot more independence and a lot more trust, and almost like they're kind of friends or associates even.
Yeah, it was like a strange dynamic.
So that was interesting. And yeah, I think the book overall to me was about growing up and fitting in and to what extent you have to give up on your childish or childlike dreams and imaginations in order to get by in the world. I think that's my big takeaway from the book. I think all of her books are really hard to classify, and I think she seems like such a strange and interesting person. I think this is just how she thinks.
Yeah.
And that's, I love when you read a book like that, that just lets you into the head of someone who is just so totally different to you.
Yeah.
And who sees the world in a completely different way.
Well, I wondered if it was almost a refugee story because they've come to London, but they're from, let's say it's the Czech Republic, but any, you know, other country, could be Taiwan, another country, that they've had, what they've had to do to fit in, or the fact that they've sort of put their life on hold because they're still holding on to their roots or their home country, but as a result they're not living in the in the moment, because Harriet says at some point she's been not really making friends because she's waiting to meet up with Gretel again. And as a result, she's actually not, you know, she's put all of her life on hold thinking, well, I'll wait till I see Gretel. But you can't live like that.
No, that's, exactly. You know, and she thinks she
But keeps. Whether there's a bigger sort of story of refugees who are sort of thinking, but I might go home, so I won't quite. I don't know.
Or almost like home won't relinquish its hold on you.
Yeah.
You can't adjust or settle into this new society because you have all these traditions and these stories and food and culture that doesn't exist anymore or doesn't exist for you. But you, how can you bring that still and allowing yourself to become a new person?
Yeah.
I think the Hansel and Gretel story I put in the Drew Hestania section.
Yeah.
So when she goes off to work at the factory, I think that's all tied up with that kind of ideas about who makes what, who does what, who's on top and who is kind of pulling the strings, I guess.
That made me think of China and the girls who have to leave their homes in the country because they're very poor and go and work as migrants in the cities, in factories, and do they really have a better quality of life or a better life? That it was sort of a comment on different economies and capitalism and things like that. So no, there were lots and lots of interesting elements. I would recommend it. I think it's a great one for discussion. It'd be a good book club book. Do you think?
I don't know.
Maybe not.
I don't think it's a book for everyone. You definitely could do it as a book club book. I think it would be one of those ones that people either loved or hated.
Well, just in the sense that I think people would get different meanings out of it. So that can be quite interesting. But, yeah, I'm really glad we read that. But I don't know, was it too much magic? That's the question for me.
I don't know. The magic, I guess, is because the dolls I fully accepted. Oh, yeah. I loved the dolls. They were great characters. That's fine. I guess, Gretel as a character, whether she was real or whether she existed in this world or another world.
Well, she describes herself as a changeling at one point, and Harriet asks her, what do you mean, changeling as in a like of non-human form who replaces a human or something? And she says, Gretel says, changeling as in changeling, we've had bad press. Which I loved. But, she's very elusive.
Yeah. I think I almost just got lost in the twists and turns with the Kershaval family and what was happening there and who was in love with who. That was quite confusing to me. But I do think that she wrapped all those ends up at the end and then, but also leaves it quite open as to where they can go next.
I liked the idea that it had that scope for different interpretations.
Oh, absolutely. And I think it's a hopeful book, you know, because I think in the main these people do love each other in a strange way, but, you know, they all
along. No, and that's what I liked. There was a positive sense to it. There was an optimism and the warmth of her tone that shone through, So, yes, I thought this was a very strong book and challenging for me with my issues around magic and fairy tales, but particularly if you enjoy a fairy tale retelling or you enjoy a bit of magical realism, you will love it because I think she's an amazing author.
The prose just sparkles, doesn't it?
Yeah. It does. I would recommend it. So with that caveat, that's a recommendation. And so that was Gingerbread by Helen Oyeyemi. And next week, Amanda and I will be reading At Dusk by Hwang Seok-yong. And in the meantime, you can follow us on Facebook at Books on the Go, email at booksonthegopodcast@gmail.com. And I'm on Instagram, Twitter and Litzy at A. Bailey Karras. And Annie?
I'm on Twitter, Instagram and Litzy at Mr_Annie.
Very
easy.
And if
you wanted to leave us a review or like us on iTunes, that would be great too.
Yes, please do. That helps people find the podcast. So we appreciate that. Thank you. And we'll see you next week. Bye for now.
Bye.